The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2019 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2019. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
Well, welcome to our presentation of Music as Core, especially in small schools. My name is Wade Buten.
And I'm Marianne Navickas-Martin, very loud.
We teach at Providence Classical School in Spring, Texas. I teach grades 3 through 6. I also lead some of the upper school ensembles.
I teach pre-K through second grade. Then I do grammar school choir as well as upper school choir, which is logic and rhetoric.
Now, we've seen music really flourish in our school over the past couple of years, and we'd just like to tell you a little bit about our experiences and kind of our road to get where we are. Just out of curiosity, how many music teachers do we have in the room? All right, lots of music teachers. How about just
administration?
Administration? Okay. And other? Very good. Well, thank you. Welcome. Well, let's start with some basic philosophies. We're going to kind of go through this quickly because I have a feeling that many people in here agree with our basic philosophies of music. So we're going to kind of start briefly, and then we'll get into the more of the who and the how. But let's just start off by saying that music is a language. It's very important to understand that music is a language in the way you approach things. And language is very ordered, just like everything of God is very ordered. It has its own syntax, it has its own grammar, it has its own history. And also, it's very important to realize that music has to be an essential part of your educational program. First of all, because God commands us to sing to him, to worship him with music. It's all over the Psalms. Psalm 98:4, make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all the earth. Make a loud noise and rejoice and sing praise. It's also an excellent way to study the beauty of God and to study aesthetics.
One of the things that became apparent to us 2 years ago when we came to Atlanta, we were just starting the music program to grow it as core. And one of the things that kept coming out to us is the true and the beautiful, and singing beautifully. And one of the things that's really important is that it also encompasses everything that is important in core curriculum, which is math. If you look at meter of music, if you look at the rhythms, it all comes down to math. I love taking part just to measure and make it into a problem. And I do the fractions, and I bring it all the way down just like a proof that they would do later on in geometry or algebra or pre-algebra. It's science, the science of sound, sound waves, how we make noise. It includes literature. When we talk to them about a ballet, if we talk about Romeo and Juliet, we bring in the literature and talk about it. And we can also relate that to scripture. And then we also have history in it and culture, which is really important. It's important to know what was going on when Mozart was writing. Why did the music change throughout time? So we bring in culture into that.
So let's go right into the who, the personnel. And many of you we have a school of about 400, K through 12. I know many of you have smaller schools, maybe 200, and some even smaller than that. But we'd just like to go over a little bit about how important it is with the background of the personnel and how that helps in your music program. So first of all, both of us are professional musicians. We've had a background, I'm sure you can read in the bio, but I'm an instrumentalist. I've been played in orchestras most of my life as a horn player, and it gives you a perspective that's just is so unique and so interesting, and that it's one of those things that just makes you so passionate about music, and it really makes you excited to share that with the students. And
I used to sing opera, and so I know that's hard to believe, but I'm very loud, and I have learned to project and use my voice in different ways, but also just learning about the literature. When I went to college, I knew nothing of opera, and the reason why I fell in love with it was because of a teacher. And so I understand how passion plays a huge role in how much the children engage. And so it's important to share that with them, as well as learning to use their voice correctly.
Also, professional experience, It's very difficult to make it into like an orchestra or an opera. It takes an extreme amount of work and disappointment. I've lost so many auditions, I can't even tell you. I mean, 73 out of 75 auditions I've lost. But, you know, it teaches you about hardship and how to get back up out of a making mistake and realize that it's more important by how you play after a mistake than the mistake itself. And so it's really important to tell students as they're making mistakes and getting all downtrodden on themselves. So the disciplines, the different disciplines between teachers is also very important.
It's important. What's wonderful about the two of us is that we're kind of, we complement each other. And the fact that he is very orderly, very organized. I'm more of the creative brain where I'm kind of like this. What if we? And that's when he sits down and goes, oh, okay. You know, and so the fact that we balance each other is wonderful, because if we both thought the same way, we wouldn't be able to probably accomplish half the things that we get to accomplish together. It's important to have instrumentalists. It's important to have pianists. It's important to utilize your students and their talents. There are students that know how to accompany. There are students that know how to play the piano but don't know how to accompany, and that's a talent in itself. So teaching them how to do that is a wonderful thing, and it's a blessing to them as well. Same with parents. Parents are out there that know how to play the cello or know how to play the violin. And so utilize that. Ask them. They usually would love to be a part of it. Also, for students to see faculty and parents and students all involved together is part of building a community. And so, once again, even with parents that might teach piano beautifully, learning to accompany a musical is a whole different level. And so it's fun for them to even experience that and learn.
So let's go into some useful skills that you might want to have as a music teacher. Technology is, well, you cannot operate today without knowing something about technology. And you can get away with it without using it, but in today's world, let's just say it makes life a lot easier. So technology is a tool that allows us to present our product in a beautiful way. Let's start off with audio and visual equipment. Even what you see right here, this is some lovely equipment that we have. But if you can have a room full of people, they have to hear and what you're doing, and they have to actually see what you're doing. And you want to present your material in a way that's pleasing to them. We have an administration that was very kind and fortuitous enough to let us purchase some great sound equipment, some speakers for the room. Because when we play music for kids, if you want them to love opera, it can't be on a little boombox about this size.
They've got to feel it.
Yeah, when you play them Bach Toccata and Fugue, you want the floor to vibrate when they open up those big pipes and they go,
wow. The pipe organ would.
Yeah, I mean, so it just makes such a difference with the kids. When you're passionate about the way something sounds, you want it to sound as much like live music as possible. So projectors, obviously, if you can afford one that projects a big image, the biggest image you can, that would be great. Software, again, this is something that's a little more my line of expertise, but just the regular Microsoft Office software, you can do a lot with it. I mean, the PowerPoint we're presenting today, a lot of times is free to almost practically free to nonprofit organizations, so I highly recommend you learn how to use that in totality. Music writing software, if you don't know how to use Finale, you're at the mercy of people who write curriculums for you instead of writing your own. So with Finale, you can make your own arrangements, do complete crazy ideas like Marianne has.
We'll share that in a
second
minute.
Graders, yes. Sound editing software and photo editing software comes in very handy. And it's very overwhelming, but my suggestion to you, know what you want in your head, really know how you want the final product to be, and then try it. It's overwhelming. Yes, I know. Just try it, and just don't stop till you get the result that you want. So, a big part of success is not just the personality of music teacher, the personalities of music teachers, but also partnering with your administration. They are your hub. They are your communication, not only with the parents, but the teachers. And so it's very important to communicate them early on. Now, many administrators don't know music like you do. They haven't grown up in a world of music. So it's important to find ways to educate them, because they really do want to know what you know. And if they see that you're passionate about it, they become a student as well. And maybe they don't have the opportunity to learn it as detailed as you, but they want to know. So, I mean, small things like reading from a hymnal. Most parents I know says, yeah, I learned how to read music from reading from a hymnal. So if you do that, and these are ways that you can generally educate other teachers and admin. But it's also important to let them know what your plan is. Don't just say, oh yeah, they do that music stuff. I mean, give them an idea of what you want, the groups that you want to start, the things that you intend on teaching, and keep an accurate calendar of events, because you can't put on a concert without the help of the admin. They have to reserve the space. They have to communicate the whens and the hows and the whys and all that kind of stuff. Communicate those plans as early as possible, because otherwise you run into issues and it doesn't work out too well. Excite them with what you're doing. It's kind of, you gotta sell. As a musician, you're always trying to sell what you're playing or singing. Budgets, you know, keep an accurate record of what you're spending and plan accordingly, okay?
Can you see he's the organized one? Yeah. All right, so one of the things that's really important is we had talked a little bit about use what you have and utilize the people around you. We are blessed to have a lot of teachers that are part of worship teams and they play the piano or they play the guitar, so we utilize that whenever we can. It's important to use the resources that you have. So yes, you can buy music, but lots of times it doesn't fit what you have. So we get very creative, and lots of times we use the finale and we take an arrangement and we make it into something else because you want to be able to do a work, but it doesn't fit your school. You can make it fit your school. You can make, you can use recorders. You can use, if you just have someone that can play guitar, then you change it to where the guitarist is your accompanist. Do whatever you can, and that's where finale is wonderful. And you can go in, you can change your arrangements. Feel that freedom. Don't lock yourself into just everything that is just printed and it's out there. There's more to you than you realize. And I think that's the one thing that we are learning with each other is that we can actually make things happen. And even if we don't have the budget, we can be creative and arrange the music, write the music, but we don't dumb it down. We use the true literature, and we just sometimes change the arrangement of or change the instrumentation to make it work for us. So utilize those resources. And the thing about space, in our situation, we don't necessarily have the best venue to perform. Now, we utilize our gym for our huge school-wide performances where we use every grade level. So that has to be a gym because it has to be ginormous. But when we do something like a musical, I have a connection with my church that we utilize the church and the stage there. So nurture those relationships in your community so you can utilize them. There, you can get anything done as long as you just start looking around. You don't have to stay in your little box. Think outside of it and see what you can do to make it happen.
So let's get to the how. Is our curriculum, the how, we basically divide into three pillars, a history, theory, and performance. And each one of these is, you know, extremely important. You can't kind of just do a lot of one and not of the other. So let's start off a little bit about how we do this. Visually, it's important to have things to represent what you're talking about. Music is something that's it's all about hearing, but since we're such a visual culture, we need to kind of help the young students associate those visual correlations with the sound. So a lot of what we had in our room, we decided to make ourselves. Just because, given based on our backgrounds, we said, no, we'd like it to be this way. And you know, with music, there's, you could scramble an egg, you can make it over easy, but it still can be a lovely egg, but you know, there's lots of ways to do it. So we decided to do it this way, and we hope that you can glean some good information from this. So this little lovely piece of gator board. It's just a little black foam board. It's very stiff. We would use this as a basis of a lot of what we have up in our music room. It's great because it doesn't bend. And when you put a piece of picture on it and paste it on it, it's very firm and it's light. It's extremely light, so you can put it up on your wall without damaging stuff with Velcro. Very simple. Or put a magnet on the back of it, stick it up to your whiteboard. Okay, so a lot of the things that you're going to see that we're using are made from this material. It can be a little expensive and it's hard to work with. Let's just say me and a table saw got very friendly, measuring exact dimensions for rhythms, but you'll see. So let's start with history. Timeline, I'm sure we all work with timelines, and you know, lots of the third grade, fourth grade timelines you see with the Veritas cards. Maybe you're familiar with those. Well, there don't seem to be any music timelines that Veritas makes. And so there are different timelines out there in the market, but again, we decided to try our own. And many music history curriculums focus on maybe one composer or two composers for a year. Because I've been an instrumentalist in an orchestra, and we played, 200 concerts a year for so many years, I've played so much great music, and I want those kids to have a taste of it. Maybe we're not going to learn all about the intricacy of life of Sasson, but I'd rather, instead of going out and just having Mexican for a year, I'd like to say, let's try a little Mexican today, so Chinese food, let's try a little sushi, just to give them a taste so they can experience. And usually some student says, well, I don't like most of this, and they go, oh, that one, I like that one, what's that one? I said, well, let me show you. So we made our own timeline, but we've integrated it, the curriculum, with what they're learning in their grade. So if the fourth grades were working on Shakespeare in the Renaissance time period, well, that's the music we listen to, so they can start to hear what music was happening during Shakespeare's time. So it's a four-year cycle from medieval all the way to modern. And believe it or not, I didn't really have a picture up here, but we have about 55 composers going across our wall. And believe it or not, we learn all of them from third to sixth grade. It's quite an adventure. So we use kind of flashcards and matching PowerPoints with handouts. You'll get to see a little of these in a minute. But along with information, it's no good to just talk about composers unless you can listen to them. And I found Spotify to be a great way to find tons of different music without buying tons of CDs. So what you can do on Spotify, you can make playlists, and I have, 55 different playlists of composers' names, and I just take great recordings and I just drag them in there, and then that's what we listen to for that composer.
Well, and you can share your playlist, so you can say to that student that they can go to that grade level and listen to those mm-hmm. songs.
And it's most very important to tell a story when you're talking about history. Because just saying, yes, this and this, but if you engage them with a story, like, did you know that Brahms was playing a concert when he was younger, and he sat down at the piano, and all of a sudden he realized that the piano was half a step flat as he started his concerto. And immediately he transposed it up a half step on the spot. Now Robert Schumann was out in the audience and knew how much of a genius that was. And so he went up and said, I had to meet you, and they became teacher and student, and they had a great relationship for the rest of their lives. Now that's a great story, and you have to tell them about it. There's even more with Clara and his wife later, but anyway. So here's an idea of what our curriculum looks like up on the wall. In third grade, we study the medieval and Renaissance composers. And to keep it consistent, we've given some, given some color coding, so you see that the medieval composers are going to be in orange. But Renaissance will be in blue. Now at the same time, the composers are on this lower level, but then we have some interesting things that have happened in history on top of them, so they can make some correlations. And like, for example, the Council of Trent, this is, they were trying to decide whether or not polyphonic music should be in the church. Well, Palestrina decided to write them a piece, the Missa Pape Marcelli, which will trying to convince them this is how polyphonic music can be holy. He says, yep, you're right. And so because of that, we had a lot of other successes. And here's an example of what the students will see for one composer. And they have a matching handout, and they fill out what's in bold right here under their sheet. So it's for a third grader, they can copy things down, they can write down their dates, but also put some important works from that composer. So when they go home, show it to their parents, they can look it up. Keeps it communal. So a fourth grade timeline. Then we study Baroque and Classical, Baroque in green, Classical in yellow, and we actually touch the beginning of the Romantic time period. That Beethoven's that transitional guy. But here's some interesting facts going on. Like, did you know, they ever think that Washington was fighting for our country, for the birth of our country, when Mozart was writing the Magic Flute? These are some things that the students really find fascinating. Oh yeah, that's pretty cool. Here's an example of what Mozart looks like. So fifth grade, we studied the 1800s of the Romantic era. And the fifth grade, oh wow, we have about 20 different composers. I'm only showing you five. But we studied some of the virtuosos like Paganini, the great German opera writer, Wagner, Debussy with his exquisite ability to write music. And some interesting,
Not the nicest person,
no. But the Civil War was going on during that time. Some people don't make that correlation. And finally, with the sixth grade, we do some of the more modern composers, and this is where the Americans come into play. Scott Joplin starts to introduce ragtime and gets going with jazz, and we had Duke Ellington starting the big band. But interesting things going on. Titanic was sinking when Stravinsky was writing. Or World War II with Duke Ellington, or The Man on the Moon with West Side Story. And, of course, Star Wars. Believe it or not, I chose to play the horn because I liked it on the Star Wars soundtrack. Truth be told, yeah, there we go. But we have a great time listening to these. And, you know, it's important to teach students how to listen. Because think about it. You go to an elevator, they have background music. You go into a restaurant, they have a TV going of, I don't know how many sports channels, they have music playing over it, and you're supposed to pay attention to the person in front of you. Okay, we're taught to ignore music. We're taught to have it be secondary. So when we listen to music, like we do Barbara Adagio for Strings, amazing piece. So we turn off all the lights, we have everyone just sit, I have them lie down on the ground, and we just don't do anything. We listen to that all the way through, 10 minutes of it, and just absorb it so they can truly understand how beautiful that is. And some people say, yeah, that was really great. But if they're doing their homework at the same time, they wouldn't get the same effect. So let's talk a little bit about theory. Theory you can kind of break up into the vertical aspect, which is pitch, going up and down, and also the horizontal with time and rhythm. So solfege is a great tool, not just for, oh, that's a cute little trick, do, re, mi, fa, sol, but you can use it to teach students a host of other things. So scales, major and minor, going to be done with the solfege ladder. The chromatic pitches, very important that students learn the difference in a major and minor second. Chords, interval training. I found interval training to be a great way to teach students what space sounds like. I mean, we see colors. But can people identify that bum, bum is a perfect fourth? All right, so it's important to give it a name so students can start to identify it when they start to sight read. Oh, yeah, that's a fourth. I know what that interval sounds like. And a circle of fifths helps with knowing the intricacies of harmony. The horizontal aspect of rhythm. Now, everyone knows the note tree, yes? Yes, we've all seen the note tree.
You'll
we use this in classes. We'll see in a minute. Mrs. Marianne uses that a lot with her pre-K through second grade classes. When we get to third grade, we've developed a new system. I guess it's not new, but it's one that we've liked, rhythm tiles. This actually shows how long a note really is, as opposed to just seeing it in a tree. We'll go over that in a minute. Oh, yes, there you go. So physical tiles show the length of a note. Tiles also offer a way to integrate with bar modeling if you have a Singapore math in your school, because you can actually see what fits and what doesn't. We'll show you that in a minute. It's also important to use a system of counting that's consistent throughout your curriculum. We use the Eastman School of Counting, so one tet, two tet, or one ti teta, two ti teta, as opposed to a one iana, two iana. There's all
there's
kinds
lots of different
yeah,
ways.
Just stick with one. Now, music money. This is another way to help students understand the value of pitch. You divide usually each class into two teams, and if they answer a question right on a history, I flip them a coin of different sizes. Now, we'll go over this later, but they're basically just washers coated with different colors of duct tape.
Duct tape.
Yes. We'll do that later. So let's go over a little bit about the usefulnesses of the solfege ladder. So, of course, we sing this every day. You notice that there's spaces between do and re and mi, but not between mi and fa. That's because there's no note between mi and fa. So it's important that they see that this is a whole step and this is a half step. Also, if you turn it on its side, it looks like a piano. Now, most people don't bother with the chromatic solfege, but we sing the chromatic solfege even in third grade. We sing it every day, going up with using the yellows on and blues on the way down. And they start to learn what those half steps sound like. It's very important. And then you can also go into, well, a major chord is do, mi, so. A minor chord, do, me, so. And they find this fascinating, and they can hear the difference. You can also use it for intervals, do to re is a major second. We could do more of that later. But here's what we printed out for a circle of fifths. I used blue and yellow because those are our school colors. But what's useful, I mean, we talked about software. This was done with PowerPoint. You don't have to go out and get some major piece of software to do this. You just have to use the free software that comes with Microsoft Office. So we also have printed out a board scale. This is just up on our board daily. And it's great for pitch recognition because you see all the C's are different colors. But then so they can see what the octave is, and you can sing your solfege going up and down. But also, it's very handy for direction of pitch. How much is for you music teachers? If I have, you point to do, and then sing do, they do. Then you point to re, and then they sing down. They sing a pitch lower. Something like, okay, this is good to help them understand that when you go to the right, you go up, and yeah. So the direction of pitch. Sight reading, you could just start to point different ones and they can know how they sound, and you can sound out twinkle, twinkle, little star or something. But also interval training. This is something I've really tried to do this year, and the students have really liked it. So C to D is a second. C to E is a third. D to F is a third. And eventually when they see a chord in a piece of music they're singing, they understand. Okay, so this is basically with our rhythm tiles and how this works. So this is instead of a rhythm tree, this is kind of with the tiles. So you start up with a whole note. And these are all made with these gator board stuff, so you can move it around the board and have them move it around as well. And two half notes go into a whole note. And of course, four quarter notes, but they can actually see how four quarter notes fits the same space as a whole note. And 8/8 notes, of course. And you can submit different kind of tiles so they can see that the blue is the same length, but it's two notes. And finally, the little 16/8 notes. But you can't have all these without the absence of notes, so you have the rests as well. And all these can be moved around and put in different orders, and they can try counting them. But with the tiles, you can also teach them compound rhythms. So instead of this first beat being as short as this one, now the dotted quarter note gets the beat. And you can see how 3/8 notes go into a dotted quarter note and such. So when you're working in class with rhythm on the horizontal aspect, you can put tiles up like so, show how different things go together. I'm going through this quickly. You can talk to me about it later. But with this, it's really great for dotted rhythms because it's really hard for them to understand dotted rhythms. So if you leave a space empty, you ask them, well, what fills the hole? And they're searching around, will find something to fill it. Well, a 16th note fills the hole. Ah, I get it. All right, very good. Same works for a dotted quarter note. What fills the hole? And so they're searching around for tiles. Sometimes they take two 16th notes, but that works. And for the system of counting, what we talked about, this is just an example. So this would be 1, 2, te. Or this would be 1, la, li, tu, ti, teta. Or te, teta. And so all this stuff is what my students run across, especially in the handbell choir, and unless they know how to count these rhythms, they can't play. So, very quickly go through our Music Money program. This is a lot of fun, and the students love the competition, of course. And so we have these jars that you see here, and each team gets one. Usually, this is the fourth grade, so I have the Baroque composers versus the classical composers. That's kind of how we do it. But each time they earn something, they get some money. And of course, in the different coins, my whole note, everyone wants a rainbow because it's the whole note. But the yellow is almost as big. But it also corresponds to the color of the music tile, so they can make the correlation. So you have quarter notes, eighth notes, and 16th notes. Well, how do you do dotted? Ah, you just cut a hole in the middle of your washer, and voila, you have a dotted half note. And then a dotted quarter note and a dotted eighth note. And after they collect all these coins, the trick at the end of the trimester is to say, all right, count how many quarter notes you got. Oh, so they're madly trying to count these things. Well, wait. If I've got this and this, how much is it worth? Well, go up to the board. And they start taking the tiles and moving them all around and seeing how many fit into a quarter note. And they start to make the correlations of the value of these pitches. So presentation, a performance, is a presentation of pitch in a beautiful way, pitch and rhythm. So we start instrumental training in third grade. We start with the recorder, and I know a lot of people, how many people have recorder programs in their school? Do you guys like it? You do? I do too. And I had never played the recorder before, but my headmaster at the time, hello, Mr. McKenna, how are you? He says, well, of course you guys need a recorder ensemble. I said, I do. He says, yes, you do. He says, wow, okay, so we actually started a recorder ensemble of soprano, alto, tenor, and a bass recorder. Great idea. I can't tell you how much fun we've had playing some Renaissance music, some Bach, and lately Star Wars music. Again, with Finale, you can do it. So the recorders, we have ensembles. In the upper school, we have the handbells, like I mentioned, but you can have all kinds of stuff going on. It really depends on your personnel. Everybody needs to learn to sing. Even if you only want to play the violin, you need to learn how to sing because God told us to. Performances, we have Christmas and spring concerts where all the grammar school sings. Each one will perform something. We group different grades together, and all the upper school ensembles perform. We do our best to make it under an hour, our best. We also have the choir singing at school events and our grammar school choir, like Grandparents' Day. So we're always getting the kids performing. And chapel as well. We have groups singing and doing different things. Marianne will tell you about it later. So a little bit about, before I leave the podium for my illustrious colleague, Marianne, tell you a little bit about the recorder program. The school, most schools, I know, who uses recorder karate? Okay, I looked at that, and it's very good. I think it's great because students can progress at their own level, and they don't have to all do it at the same time. Some kids are just better at it, let's face it. But it looked a little easy. I don't know, I see the way kids work on their phones and their video games and all that kind of stuff, and they have amazing dexterity. And I thought, well, why can't they do that on an instrument? They can, they totally can. So I started off myself by saying, okay, I gotta learn this instrument. It took me months, and it was so frustrating, and I was trying to get all these videos or things, and I finally got a hold of it, and we came up with a new program called Recorder Kung Fu, just sort of the same principle of belts, but wanted to give them something to sink their teeth into. So for each, to pass the white belt, they have to pass a scale, a rhythm, and a tune. You might be thinking, oh, good grief, the C major scale, doesn't that use all the fingers? Yeah, it does. And it, some of them don't even pass it for like 4 months. But if they can get through that C major scale, it's kind of like in Suzuki. You know, if they can get past Twinkle, everything goes faster after that. So it is a bit of a struggle, and but it only takes one kid in the class to kind of go, whoa, I can do it. Then they go, oh, they can do it, I can do it. And then it's like an amazing effect. So here's an example of an orange belt, and you might be thinking, okay, that's ridiculous. But I've had several third graders be able to play The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe because they hear it on the movie. Complaints from parents saying that I'm hearing on the way to church. Yeah, but they love it. So and here's one more example of a blue belt. But I've had some kids make it all the way to red. No one's made it past black. I haven't even ridden it yet because no one's passed brown. But then we have a scorecard. This is an example of one of my third grade classes, and this is done with Excel. It's just a way to measure their progress. And you can see I had one kid make it all the way to the green belt this year. Not bad. And here's an example of a sixth grade scorecard. And where they have all kinds of different, a lot more colors up there. But this is a program that starts in third, and their progress doesn't start over in fourth. It continues all the way through sixth. And so the older ones can lead the younger ones. All right, I've been talking way too much. Now it's time to talk about the littles. The littles.
Okay, so one thing that we talk about a lot is building foundation. And so when you start with pre-K and K, it's really pretty simple what you want to work with them on to build that foundation, and that is steady beat is a huge one. And most people go, oh, that's no big deal, everybody can keep a beat. I'll walk away from that one. But that's what you have to work on all year long, and there are different ways to do it where they don't even realize. There are games, there are all sorts of things that you can play and do, and they don't even realize that they're doing it. But it is very important. The other, my two main things that I want to get across, especially in pre-K, is steady beat and singing beautifully. We have a tendency to listen to a lot of different music, and I cannot tell you how many times kids come into my room to sing, and it's more screaming than singing. And a very wise man once told me that you do not want to produce schlock. So I did not want to produce that. I wanted it to actually be beautiful. And I did have a moment this year, I'm not going to lie, because you're going to have your moments, where I had just one student start screaming in the middle of Jingle Bells. And then everyone, it's like a domino effect. And I was mortified. used it as a learning tool. After that, we spoke about it, we talked about it, we said, we are not going to do that again. And so when we got to the spring concert, I just looked at them and I was like, they knew. No more screaming. But what I like to do is I pair these two grade levels somewhat together. Pre-K and K, I kind of lump a little bit together. Kindergarten goes faster. It's basically reviewing everything they did in pre-K, if they were in pre-K, because a lot of times you don't have those same kids. But I take those kids and I go through the same exact curriculum, but go faster. And then I take them further. And especially with kindergarten, you're going to go into literature that's much different. So we start off, and because God is a God of order, I'm very orderly with them when they come in. They know that the first thing that they do, they sit on that circle rug. And so we sit on the circle rug and we start to sing. And from day one, we start singing by ourselves. So you don't just sing with a group. And I did have a twin little girls that they didn't even speak. They just sat there and they look at each other and people would speak for them. So, but by the end of this year, they finally sang by themselves. It was very exciting. So, but I just continually give them opportunities to sing, and it's not a big deal. And so we go through the alphabet songs. And I found this really cool book over here, and it's like a flip book, and I just kind of happened upon it, and it goes through every alphabet letter. Now, it's not phonograms, but they really do things with their letters in their grade level, both pre-K and K, and we sing little songs. For example, A, we start with A. Always have little motions, because kids love that, and they need to move, okay? Because if they sit there for too long, they start shaking. So A is for Alice, who met an alligator swishing down the alleyway on Apple Avenue. Shoo, said Alice, allergic to all gators. Achoo, achoo, off she flew. Yes, I used to sing opera. Do you see it together, correlates? Anyway, so that starts with A. And then their favorite one is X. So I have to share this with, because we made up all of our own little motions for it. So. Xavier was an alien, extraterrestrial. He was born on planet X, extremely far from Earth. He had two pointy heads. His vision was X-ray. He saw exactly everything in an alien way. Now, you will spend the rest of that class period teaching them how to do this. Okay? I'm sorry, Seamus is talking to me. That's my phone. So you just will do it. But it's fun. It's teaching them skills. They're moving. They're getting used to coordination. We all know that's part of it. Okay? So we go through those really slowly in pre-K. And then in kindergarten, we go a little bit faster. And then what I let them do at the end of the year is they pick different letters that they like to lead the whole class in. There's always the same favorites. After we finish our letter song, they always know that I have a book. And I usually pick a book that you can sing. I try to always pick a book that you can sing with. And find really ones that have lovely pictures. This one's really cute because the teapot wears red high tops. Just saying. They love that. Okay? But you sing it. And you sing the whole book. And they love that. And so I usually do it twice. I'll do it the first time I see them. And then I'll do it the second time. And usually by the second time, they're wanting to sing along. And then at the end of the year, the last 2 weeks, I let them go back and pick the books that they liked the most. So it makes it a lot of fun for them. I also have books that have times for them to stand up and dance. And one of them is Down in the Jungle, the green one. Okay. You give me a little jazzy. So here we go. I've got to do my favorite one. I don't know if you know this, but this one also comes with a CD. One thing that I'm going to tell you is I'm a contralto. And I don't want my littles to sound like a 50-year-old woman. I just don't. I want them to sound like kids. It's hard for me to sound like a child. It just is. I try, but it just doesn't work. And then you know that they mimic. And so if I start singing and I sing strong in my voice, they start trying to do with this vibrato. And I'm like, stop it. You know, it's not natural. And so I'm always talking to them about using their God-given voice. And lots of times I'll use videos or I'll use recordings. But once we kind of get into it, I start letting them lead. And it's amazing. You just see these kids that you would normally never think would want to lead they'll get up and they'll do it because they just want to. And then if they have cool hand signs that they do with it, then that's even more fun for them. So one of the things that we do, especially if we are really having a rough time sitting still, then I'll pick a book that they move with. And this one, they dance with it, and it's lots of fun. And they know that they sit, and then when it comes to this one part, they stand up and they do the dance motion, but then they have to sit again. And so to you know, throw them a little curveball, say it like siéntate, I'll say it in Spanish or some other language, and they love that. Because they're like, what's that? And the next thing you know, you hear them saying, siéntate. It's very cute. So this one is, down in the jungle where nobody hears, there's a fine young elephant cleaning her ears with a flippity flap here, a flippity flap there. That's the way she's cleaning her ears. Then I go, stand up, clean your ears. They get the little Q-tip. I don't know if you ever saw that move. It's like this, and you throw it away. Q-tip, throw it away. Okay. Tidy-oddy-tee, boogie-oogie-oogie. Tidy-oddy-tee, boogie-oogie-oogie. Tidy-oddy-tee, boogie-oogie-oogie. That's the way she's cleaning her ears. Sit down, siéntate, por favor. Then we move to the next page. Okay? So it's lots of fun to kind of play with them a little bit and let them have fun. Then they know after that, they hear me go, march, two, three, four. March to the risers, march, two, three, four, march to the risers. Then we march over to the risers. They do that now without me even saying it. Lots of times they just go, time, march, two, three, four, and they go and they do it. Okay, so now I've taught them how to move quietly together, doing something, working on their steady beat in the movement. So now we're on the risers, and they know we go through it every time. Standing tall and straight, feet are planted, hands are to our sides. Yes, you can get pre-Kers to do it. Promise you. Okay, it's going to take the first couple of months, depending on your class. Because there are times when you have that class, you know what I'm talking about? So you just have to keep working with them. But as long as you're consistent and you're patient, they're going to do it. So we stand and we sing. And we sing our hee-hee-ha-ha-ha. We do the same warm-ups that the older kids do. And that's neat for them because they hear the older kids doing it, so they feel like a big kid, okay? Then we say, what are we doing? We're singing staccato. And I say staccato. Of course, it takes a little while, but we get it. And I go, what does staccato mean? And then we go, short and detached. So we get through that. Legato. Legato is your long lines. So they already know that in pre-K, kindergarten, first grade, and second grade. So by the time they get to Mr. Buten, they're ready. Okay? So, that's the first and second. I'm not quite there yet. One thing I wanted to touch on with my kindergarten. Kindergarten, I go into literature because we're moving faster and we're doing instrument families. We do Romeo and Juliet is our last thing that we do of the year. And I do. We go through the story. Now, there is a child's version that's shorter. Yeah, because they don't have the attention span to go through the play. But I go through a shorter version of it. But we talk about it. We relate it to scripture. And lots of times I have to pull out my cheat sheet. Sorry. When we're talking about Romeo and Juliet, we talk about what is it that God wants us to do most of all. And that is love each other. So, and love thy neighbor. And what happens in Romeo and Juliet? They're not loving each other. They're not loving each other's neighbor. And what ends up happening? Terrible things happen when you don't do that. So it's relating it to scripture as well. And so lots of times I bring in either Romans 12:10 or Romans 13:8 and just talking about the importance of loving each other. So bringing in scripture, lots of times when I go into the chapel and I hear what we're talking about in the sermon, I oftentimes bring into whatever we're talking about in the sermon into the music room. So they have that correlation. Make it part of everything that you're doing. So when they go to first and second grade, we have now grown up. We do not do circle time anymore. No more alphabet songs, and they miss them, especially the hiccup one. I'll sing the hiccup song for you later. When somebody hiccups, I'll just automatically sing it. It's awesome. So then we, with first grade, they go right onto the risers, and we start right off the bat always with a warm-up. We do our solfege. We do our hand signs. They're doing hand signs in kindergarten. Okay, they can do it. Just take the time to do it. So then it's not so scary when they get older and they're starting to sight read with their hand signs, okay? So we do that with first and second. Start on the risers. Rhythm lessons are really important because when they're in kindergarten, I only usually do quarter notes, quarter res, eighth notes, eighth res. And it's and not even eighth res, we just do eighth notes. And they use TT and TA. Of course, they have to laugh. I won't get into it, you know what I'm talking about. So that's the older ones. The younger ones are, and this is rudimentary, doing the Kadai system, also doing this. Oh, I did it again with the microphone. Okay, so I'll say to them, keep a steady beat, so that they know the steady beat is the fist in their hand or the fist on their leg, and they'll go ti, 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 ta, ta. And we'll even do that in pre-K. Kindergarten, then I'll let them get on a drum and play it and physicalize it, so they have a lot of fun with it. When they get in first and second grade, then we get into the 16th notes. Still knowing the same procedure, they keep that steady beat, okay, and then they say it. Now we're going into numbers. We're doing the Eastman School of Counting, so we say, 1-ti-teta-2, 3-ti-teta-4. And that's how we do our rhythm exercises. Now, we tie it all into something called a memory song. And the memory song, we have one per semester. We are in a trimester situation. Okay, I do have to explain this picture behind it. Okay. I study opera with these kids, believe it or not, and they love it. At first, they kind of look at me funny. But then I start telling the stories of them. And they love the story of Barber of Seville. And so, you know, when the rabbit's going, love that, okay? We go into that when we study the opera. And what I do is I like tradition. I'm a big tradition person. And I love the fact that I want my seniors to be able to come to our spring concert and sing along with the littles when they do either Magic Flute or Barber of Seville. And this is where, I love White because he just deals with me. And we're singing, I was like, okay, so first year I chose Magic Flute, okay? And I love the Magic Flute, it's a great story. Kids get into it really easily. We talked about Papageno, Papageno. We talked about the fact that it's about revenge. And are we supposed to take revenge? No, God asks us to put it into his hands. It's not on us to take revenge, because when we do, we cause bad things to happen. So that's a big part of what Magic Flute is about. Well, all of what Magic Flute is about, really, except for love. Always love. So when I went into Magic Flute and we did the Papageno, Papageno, I really took the music from the opera. And the first and second graders sang the duet of Papageno and Papagena. They sang it in German. And they loved it because by the time they performed it, they knew the story. They were hooked. In fact, they would come into my room. I was amazed because I didn't know what to expect that first year. And when I told him I wanted to do that, and he said, I can help you with that. I can put it into, and he put it into Finale. It looked beautiful. And that's what they learned from. And they had a great time. It wasn't babied for them. It wasn't the children's version. Okay, they sang it and it was awesome and they had a wonderful time. So what we do at the end of that school year, the last week, is I show part of the opera. I'm always showing clips of the opera because we go through the whole story. We go back to Papageno, Papageno, which is really at the end of the opera anyway. And to hear them sing along is the most amazing day for me. I am walking on cloud nine that day because I'm just like, they get it, and they're having fun with it, and they're listening to good musicians sing it. And one thing I will tell you, when we revisited it this year, that commercial with the Queen of the Night aria, and she sounds synthesized. You know what I'm talking about, people? Have you heard it? Okay. Oh, what is that? I'm like, that's not the way it's supposed to sound. And let me tell you something. Because I had played it for the kids, and then that commercial came out, and they came in, and they were like, was that the aria? And I was like, yeah. That didn't sound right. No, it didn't sound right. You're right. You know, learn the difference between a good recording and the way it's supposed to sound, and then the crazy things that people do to it. And be able to discern. Discernment is important. It's one of our four pillars. So, It's one of those things that you've got to teach them. And when they're listening all the time, they start hearing it and they're excited about it. So when we decided on a second opera, because what we do is we flip them every year. I do Magic Flute 1 year, Barbara Savelle 1 year. Then we go back and do Magic Flute. So everybody gets it, first and second grade year. Because the first graders sang Papagena, the other ones sang Papageno. The next year they sang Barbara Savelle. And this is when I looked and I said, you know what I'd really like to do? Is the Figaro. And so he made it to where they're going, Figaro, Figaro, Figaro. They're singing back and forth to each other, and it's the actual aria. It's the coolest thing ever. So they have fun, and they're singing in Italian. So 1 year they sing in German, the next year they sing it. And this is first and second grade. And they're having a ball. And now they're hooked. So you got them. And the great thing is once they go to him, they're already into classical music, and they're loving it. So I think I've gone through. The memory song is the one thing I wanted to show you. What I do with the memory song, this is actually the first one first graders see right after kindergarten. And I make it like a puzzle. So what I tell them is, first we're going to write in the rhythm with the stick lines. So the song is bounce, high, bounce, low, measure line. Bounce the ball to shy, low. And then we put the ending, which is the two bar line. They do everything, they write it in, okay? Because half of what we learn, if we don't start doing it, it doesn't always stick. I was one of those people, I had to write it out. So they put the meter, we talk about meter. And then after that, we've already been doing solfège, so solfège is not weird to them, but the bounce high, bounce low is bounce high, bounce low, bounce up all too shy, low. This is Kadai. And so it's very, you know, so me, so, so me, so. So you're doing everything, like with your solfège, and you're doing hand signs. So you write in the solfège first on those lines underneath. Then you talk about what key it's in, and you have them write it. In this case, it was in the key of C. So then they go up here and they write A, B, C, C, D, E, F, G. So they see how it moves. And they see how music is very orderly. There is order to music, absolutely. So we do that, then we take that and we go, okay, the first note is so. So you take the so, the letter name for so, you find it on your treble clef. So now you're incorporating everything and it's a puzzle. And we don't do this in one day. This is throughout the first semester. We take time and we talk about it. So they really, by the time we're done with this, they've got it, they take a test on it, they do their rhythm, they do their solfège. All right, so this is the way that we end second grade, is they are doing harder pieces. They are also doing the note tree, and this is the way the note tree looks. For them, it helps, and I'm able to take what he's made with the boards, and I kind of break them out. And then I push them together and show them how it's very orderly. So that's how it works with this. And then this is the Papagena, Papagena. I just wanted to show you a little bit of it. All right, so choir. I went from a choir of 22 kids to now we have almost 50. We have 49. And the most important thing, number one thing that you do with a choir is build a culture. Okay, you've got to make it to where they care about each other. They do things for their school. They're an important part of the community and the culture of the school. And you feed into it. They're a family. And I think once they have ownership of that, then it builds and it grows. And they care. I found opportunities for them outside of what we do in the classroom. Because there's only so much and so much time that we have. So those that want to go further, I try to find opportunities for them. Like for us in Texas, choirs are a big thing. TMEA is a huge thing in the fall, or in the springtime. But they start in the fall and they do auditionings. Well, now they are putting together a small school group, and I'm part of that. And so we audition for small school. We do region. We had a region concert, which was phenomenal. And there's nothing like when those kids go to a concert and they are with like-minded people that are totally into it, and it's outside of the school, they just love it. Now, ACCS is doing that, too, with the Honor Choir, and I highly recommend it. Get your kids involved in it. I have 10 here this year, and they are loving every minute of it. So I highly recommend get your kids involved in that. Have them audition, okay? And the audition process is not scary. So go through with it. But find opportunities for them. We also have UIL solo and ensemble in Texas. I don't know what your states have, so I'm not going to go into that fully. Because you have junior high and high school, our biggest problem is finding competitions that fit our model of having, I have 7th through 12th graders. And especially in Texas, most of the contests are for either middle school or high school. And so when you have the whole age gamut, they have nothing for you. So that's what was more difficult. Now, in TPSMEA, for us, that's the private school sector. They have a little bit more. But I'm in TAPS. We have a different system. We have a lot of different systems that we can go through. So I am just exploring like crazy trying to find out about it. Okay, musicals. Okay, you can do it, people. You can. And you just have to be selective. And we did our first musical was Bye Bye Birdie. We didn't have a venue. We ended up using my church. No side stage area at all. We just learned to work with it. And we did it kind of black box style. What that means is minimal. There wasn't very stage, a lot of stage setup, no scenery. We just had props and black boxes to have different levels, and then costuming. But because we paired ourselves with Christian Youth Theater in Texas is a big thing in Houston area. And so they let us have costumes for a very small price. And so we've been going through that. And so that's what I'm saying. Always pair yourself. See what you have in your community that you can partner with. It's amazing how much they really do want to work with you. So we did our musical 2 years ago. This year we did Follies. And so we did scenes. Now, we didn't do it pop show style. I hate to say this, but that I struggle with that because it usually gets pretty cheesy. And the music is pretty cheesy, and I struggle with it. So we actually did scenes from different musicals and put on the whole scene, the costumes, the makeup, the everything. So it was a lot of fun to do that. And we utilized a parent that played the music for us and was an accompanist. Repertoire. Because you have 7th or 12th graders, you don't always know what level they're coming in on. You have to have an easy piece, and then I usually have a medium level piece. And then I have one that we strive for. And I always felt like if we didn't get there, we wouldn't perform it. But at least we're going to work on it because you do have your kids in there that have been taking music since they were 5. So you just have to be creative. But there's stuff out there. There's stuff for SAB, SATB. We struggle finding tenors. I think that's kind of one of those things that a lot of people struggle with. But that's how we do it with the small... Small school problems, we wanted to hit that really quickly. One of the biggest ones is time commitment. Our kids are over the board doing tons of stuff. So you have to be creative. I only see my kids 3 times a week. Most high schools see them every day. Also, their afternoons, they are in sports. And so it's hard to get them to do things after school. We utilize the morning. I utilize my lunches. We just try to make it work. You just have to. You have to be flexible because these kids are in everything because it's small, and so they're needed, and you don't want to lose those kids. So you just have to learn to be flexible and roll with it. The students that are the small numbers in choir, once again, I started with 22, went into madrigals. We did madrigals first, and then we grew. As we grew, we were able to do bigger things. But there's lots of stuff out there. I think Mr. Butte and I are, we're both very available to, if you want to get in touch with us, ask us any questions. But it's been fun to watch this program grow. And our ultimate goal is for it to become core and for it to be one of those things that they do throughout their whole career in school. So I think that's pretty much everything that we've tapped on.
Does anyone have any questions?
We're running out of time. Uh-oh. Hold on. I do like, if for choir, we do work on our music. Like, I see, it's interesting the way we have it split up. I see Monday, Wednesday, rhetoric. I see Tuesday, Thursday, dialectic, or logic, because they're going a little bit slower. And then on Friday, I have them all together. And it's worked pretty well.
We have time for one more question. Yes, ma'am.
I knew that was coming.
Well, it took me about a month to make. Lots of cutting saw printing out on printers, X-Acto knives, and
but it really comes down to copyright.
Yeah, I mean, I got a lot of these images. I'm going to edit this, and I made my own little. It's kind of a custom-made thing. Talk to me later. We can probably,
Well, if you have any questions, please reach out to us, and good luck.